How many of you are familiar with MySpace? All right, so this is not an uneducated audience. Good, I'm glad. How many of you have your own MySpace? And how many of you have seen what your kids actually are doing on MySpace? All right. The kids, your youth group kids. Yeah. Okay. So, by and large, we're a pretty educated group, so I'm not going to do too much in the way of background, but when we do start, for the benefit of those who don't know much, there will be an overview and an instruction, so don't worry, you're not going to be left out. But we will hopefully have more discussion towards the end as opposed to just a straight lecture. So we'll give it another minute if anybody else is coming, and then we'll get started. All right, it's 3:15, so we're going to get into it because I actually want to do quite a bit today. I don't just want to give an overview of blogging, MySpace, that kind of stuff, although that is important. I want to first begin by telling a story and then share just a brief biblical reflection because, after all, this is the Urban Youth Workers Conference and we're all involved in what we do on some level because of our faith and a passion and a calling from God. So we're not going to leave that out. In fact, it's core to what we're doing here today. And then we're actually going to process through some of the challenges and what's going on in the MySpace universe. But I want to tell you a story because I think it put into perspective to me yet another example of how the church sometimes doesn't get it until it's too late. And we miss the mark. Back in the fall of 2000, I was one of a bunch of youth workers that was invited by a national youth ministry to come and speak about how they could become relevant to urban youth. And it wasn't really us talking at them. It was more of a, you know, dialogue, sit down around a round table and ask hard questions and brainstorm ideas and all of this. And as we were in that setting, one of the things that came out was the idea that in order to engage our kids, more and more of our kids are using the internet. Yes, in the late 90s, there was still a big issue of digital divide and how do we provide access to inner city kids. But the trends were all that more and more of our kids were online. They were using the internet on a regular basis. And so one of the big conversation points in that room was the idea of creating a virtual community where kids could find their voice, find other people like them, interact with each other, discover affinity groups, things that were in common, be entertained, engage socially with their friends. And, you know, so this conversation, there was a dreaming session. About 6 months later, they engaged some of us to take the idea a little bit further. So now we're in early 2001. And the more we talked about it and fleshed the idea out, we put together what they called a creative brief for an online community called My Life. This community was actually scheduled to go, or the proposal was scheduled to go before the board of directors at their September 2001 board meeting, which happened to fall 10 days after 9/11. And so in the aftermath of 9/11, the idea got put on hold and never was returned to by the organization. But there was a lot of thought and discussion. Wouldn't it be something if we could create a community online where kids could meet up and find one another? And what might that look like? And how might that be expressed? And where could this all take us? And so it didn't happen. It was an idea on a shelf in a ministry closet. And it never materialized. Well, fast forward a little bit of time, and something called blogging begins to captivate the public's imagination, and people start to blog and interact. And a blog is basically a personal website, for those of you unfamiliar with it. It's a place where anybody could create their own identity, discover their own voice, talk about whatever comes to mind. Some blogs are very specific in terms of subject matter and content, but some of them are as completely random as there are people. You know, they're literally that, the variety is that great of what kind of blogs exist. But people began, through the use of technology, to create these spaces where they could find their voice and they could express who they were. And this blogging thing happened kind of below the radar for a little while because it was mainly techies that were into it. But the more people began to glimpse the power of it, the more it grew. And then something unique happened in 2004, which was a presidential election where this obscure candidate from a nowhere state in the Northeast, who was running his campaign out of a tiny office above a bar in this tiny town, you know, in the middle of the mountains of Vermont, begins to harness the power of these things called blogs and social networks. And he goes from being a nobody that unless you were from the Northeast, no one ever heard of him, to being the front runner in the Democratic race for the candidate for president. And we all know him now as Howard Dean. And he revolutionized political campaigning because a guy named Joe Trippi, who was his campaign manager, understood the power of the internet for people to find their voice and connect with one another. And they began to organize things that literally it went from being this fringe group of supporters to being a mobilized mass of people that raised more money than anybody except George Bush at that point. They had more momentum and energy to their campaign than anybody else. And the entire media world was fascinated. Where did this guy come from? Who are his followers? How has he mobilized the masses? And so people's eyes began to be awakened. Well, again, below the radar, there it captured the imagination of the political pundits and the media because of the campaign. But below the radar, young people were discovering this same force called blogging and the ability to find your voice and connect with people like you. And so these social networks began to pop up. Things like Skonex and Facebook and Friendster and MySpace and lots of other communities like this. And more young people began to use it because they're not afraid of technology. And something began to happen where now, how many of you have heard of Google? Did you know Google is now a verb, right? We Google things. You don't know what something means, so just Google it. You want to find something out about some place you've never been? Google it. Google is now a verb. Did you know that 2.5 times the number of people that use Google log on to MySpace every single day? 2.5 times the number of Google users are using MySpace every single day. 87% of young people between the ages of 12 and 17 use the internet. They're comfortable online. Is there a digital divide issue? That remains, yes. But because computers are now available in every classroom and every library and, you know, are ubiquitous, and because everybody, it seems, now has cell phones, and more of those cell phones have internet capability, and kids are carrying Sidekicks and Trios and lots of other things in their homes, they've got internet access. And they're comfortable using it because they've been gaming, they've been doing it their whole lives. So 87% of kids, 12 to 17, use the internet. 6.5 hours a day, our kids are consuming media information. Whether that's television, music, the web, video games, for up to 6.5 hours a day, our kids are submersing themselves in this information. They're multitasking when they're online. They're comfortable with media. They use it all the time. They're multitasking. For 1.75 of our day, they're surfing the internet while watching TV with music blasting in the background. And chances are they're playing some friend in, you know, the next town online, so they're gaming at the same time. So they're multitasking with the use of media. Our kids have embraced it. It's become a ubiquitous part of the culture. It's everywhere. And you can't get away from it. And now all sorts of internet terms are becoming verbs, like Google or podcasting. You know, things like video casting. I mean, people are beginning to understand what this stuff means. Formerly, it was the world of techies, but it's a real part of our culture that we're missing. Well, I discovered blogging about 1.5 years ago. It took me 2 years to get it. I have a friend who is much more sophisticated than I am, and he's been blogging for a long time, and he was trying to help me understand what a blog was, and I had no real interest every time he'd mention the word because it just sounded funny. So I could care less about a blog. But after about 2 years, I finally got it, and I began to develop a blog. This is actually my blog. Online, rather than have a PowerPoint presentation, I've put it online so that anybody could access the material, kind of do it as we're going. Just to demonstrate the ease of blogging, I didn't have the idea to do this until about 15 minutes before the last workshop, and I had a presentation to make. And within 15 minutes, was able to pull together the research that I was going to present and throw it online so that people could have it. If you've ever used email, if you've used a web-based email like Yahoo or AOL or Gmail or Hotmail or any of those, you are capable. You have the technical sophistication to start a blog. Well, I discovered blogging about a year and a half ago, and I began to enjoy it. So last fall, I had a brainstorm. I say to myself, we had this wonderful idea for My Life, and that never went anywhere. Well, this thing called MySpace has come on the scene, and I hear that lots of kids have MySpace accounts. So let's kind of take an informal survey of the kids that we're working with, and let's see if they've ever seen MySpace, or if they had any thought for whether MySpace could be used to engage with some of their friends. You know, we're trying to reach out and meet kids. If this is part of the space that they're utilizing, and we believe, like the Gospels teach, that the Word becomes flesh and dwells among the people, and one of the places where our kids are dwelling is online, well, maybe we can become flesh online and use it. So I think this is like a stroke of genius. And I call some of the kids together, and there's about a dozen of them. And we work in an inner city area. You know, we have all the issues of digital divide and everything else. So I really didn't know how aware our guys would be, or if there'd be any resonance with creating some kind of strategy to engage with kids online. So we sit down and I ask them. And it turns out that every single kid I'm sitting with, many of whom are struggling in school, you know, they're struggling with literacy and basic academic subjects. I discovered that every single kid had a MySpace or a Zanga or a Sconex account. They all were involved in social networking. And what was interesting that day, we have a couple of really old computers in our center, but they do have internet access. And at the beginning of the program, the after-school program, there's some free time. And all the kids wanted to be on the computers. And I didn't really know what they were doing because I don't normally, you know, those aren't normally the hours that I'm there. So I'm sitting there watching and kind of, you know, just trying to have some discussion. And as I look, I find they're all logging on to one of these accounts. And they're engaging with each other. So now we sit down to have this conversation, and it turns out they're already there. They're so far ahead of my curve. They've been doing it. It's like, been there, done that. Welcome to our world. You know, it's like this awareness happened. And so we began to engage with them online. And what I've discovered in our little time that we spend online is that our kids are they're doing all the things we want them to do online, as well as all the things we don't want them to do online. What do I mean? What are the things we want them to do? We want to be able to connect with kids in real terms, right? We want them to be vulnerable, to share their lives with us, to open up, to be candid, to be real, to tell us what's going on, so we'll have an opportunity to engage them in meaningful conversation. Well, I want you to know that our kids are talking about real stuff online. What are some examples? Why should I care so much for everyone else when no one gives a blank about me? That was one sentence of one of the girls' blog posts on her MySpace. And this is a girl from my youth group. Now, she wouldn't sit down with me and tell me what she wrote online, even though I could access it and read it and connect with her. Why do guys say that they like you, but they make you feel like blank? That was a question in this long, rambling, you know, exhortation, or, no, that's the wrong word, like ranting that this girl was expressing and wrestling with. Why do guys do this? Obviously something happened to her that day or that week in school, and she's venting online for all the world to see. I will get you drunk and help you plot revenge against the sorry blank who made you sad. Again, another kid from my youth group. I will get you drunk and help you plot revenge. Yeah, the Prince of Peace has grabbed a hold of your life. Right? But that's what they're talking about online. And I'm here and I'm like, oh my, you guys are already there. Cool, let me get your addresses. And they gave them. It wasn't like they were hiding out. I don't know, like, I don't understand the logic of that, by the way. Because they won't necessarily tell you face to face, but they'll give you the website address where they're talking about this stuff. I don't really get that, but nevertheless, that's the way it works. Why is it that life sucks? My mother, I can't stand her. These are all different comments that kids in the youth group were making online. If it weren't for their MySpace accounts, I probably would have suspected some of that. Or my staff would have maybe at some point perceived some of that. But we would have missed it, the opportunity to really plug in when it was a real felt issue, if we weren't in that space. How many of you remember in December, a young man whose last name was Dungy committed suicide? His father is Tony Dungy, the coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Interestingly enough, in December, the December issue of New Man magazine profiled Tony Dungy and the work that he does with fathers. The ministry work. He's a born-again believer, doing amazing work with mentoring and all kinds of other things. Well, his 20-year-old son committed suicide. And in New York, where our media is legendary in its pursuit of the salient stories, some investigative reporter tried to find out, how could this kid that seems so well adjusted, that everybody loves, who has a great father that the world esteems and respects, how could this happen that he would commit suicide? And I frankly didn't think that the investigative reporter really got to much. But the one thing that he said in his report that smacked me upside my head was that this boy had a MySpace account. And as well adjusted as he seemed in the flesh, he was talking about some things on his webpage that weren't so well adjusted. He was talking about things that betrayed a broken heart. And a kid who was wrestling with real issues, who was hurting. And somehow, people miss the signs. And a tragedy unfolds. Why are we talking about this? Because MySpace is a window into the world of our kids. And frankly, it's not always a great view. Sometimes it's a window into a space that looks ugly, smells bad, is offensive, drives us away, but nevertheless, it's part of their world. And the question for us is, what do we do about that? How do we engage with that? Do we just point the finger and say, you shouldn't be doing that? That's one approach. Do we sit down and enter the space and begin to engage with them on that level? That's another approach. Do we have to educate them as to what's going on? That's another piece of it. But at the end, the beginning point, I think, for us is to really begin to relate to it. The reason I stuck this online is because this is an area of particular interest to me. So I've done a fair amount of research and written at different times about it. So you're welcome to check out the blog and some of those entries. But here's my MySpace account. I set up a MySpace because I wanted to get to know my kids and who are they hanging out with. And so I want to walk you through some of my friends. I have 146 friends on MySpace. Friends is an interesting term in the online universe, because a lot of times you don't even know who these people are. But a couple of interesting things I've begun to observe. When you visit my friends, who all have their links here, and anybody, I'm not logged in or anything, you're all welcome to go to a place like this. I find young men like Blake. Blake is a kid that we know, that we've ministered to. He actually doesn't, he's not part of Generation Excel, which is the ministry that I'm affiliated with, but he's a kid from the neighborhood where I live, and he's friends with people that I'm very close to. And so I've gotten to know him a little bit, just hanging out, but there's a church in the community that's reached out to Blake, and he's part of the thing, you know, the thing. So you go to his site. This is a new one because his old one got shut down by MySpace. MySpace was offended by his site, so they shut it down. But you begin to look at his website, and this is public for anybody, you know, to look and to read and to get involved with. And you begin to look, and some of the stuff is silly, and you don't even know, you know, it's like meaningless, or it appears meaningless. But then you begin to investigate their souls and what they're really wrestling with. And this is all live, by the way. The point is that at any moment you could do this. I haven't even gone to his site in about a week. But you go on here and you find things like this from Petey Boy. I don't know who Petey Boy is, but we can look, link on Petey Boy and look at his thing. Though the eyes are the window to the soul, the zipper is the window to the underwear. I don't know Petey. He claims to be 22 years old. I don't know who this guy is. I've never seen his MySpace before. But the point is, at any moment, you can find out about the people that your young people are associating themselves with. I think his self-description speaks volumes about what he's wrestling with, what he's struggling to understand. And if I had an opportunity to get involved in his life, I could know how to pray for him. I could know what are some of the real issues that might require intervention. You know, I could set up an opportunity to take him out to lunch. Some of the older generation, they hear about blogs and all this kind of stuff, and they think that we're speaking an either-or language, right? They think, oh, online virtual relationships are trying to replace real relationships. You can't get intimate in this space. I don't know if you caught this, but for social networking, things like MySpace and Zanga and Friendster and Skonex in these areas, every kid is spending an average of an hour and 22 minutes a day in that space. It's not either or for them. They're in the space, they're making new friends, they're identifying with affinity groups. How many of you on May 1st wondered how millions of kids across our country could be mobilized to march for immigration? Aren't our kids politically lethargic, apathetic? You know, when has a kid been animated by a political issue before? Yet millions showed up to march. If you go to something like MySpace and you do a search for groups, let's do a keyword search for immigration. See how many groups pop up. Knowledge and Wisdom. There are 406 affinity groups on MySpace dealing with the subject of immigration. 23,289 members in Knowledge and Wisdom. Hawkish Republicans, which I'm assuming is the converse of the people that mobilized, 20,379. 13,349 for iCandy, Latina Liz, and the Latinos that love them. Whatever that title means, obviously, they must have been engaged in mobilizing for the marches. But they've got thousands of kids that at the press of a button get a notice about where to meet, when to leave class, who to connect to, you know, what to wear, how to dress, what to bring, and they're getting mobilized for political causes. They're getting mobilized musically. Did you know that in 2005, MySpace grew? Membership in MySpace quadrupled in 1 year. By December, there were 40 million members on MySpace. 40 million. It was such a phenomenon that the small business owner we call Rupert Murdoch. How many of you know who Rupert Murdoch is? He owns Fox News and all kinds of other wonderful things. Fox Films and News Corp and tons of other media. Rupert Murdoch paid over $500 million to acquire MySpace. He spent over $500 million to acquire MySpace, which was an invention of a college student. He's doing pretty well, right? His name is Tom, by the way. If you have a MySpace account, you know who Tom is, because he's everybody's friend. Tom now has 80 million friends, and we're going to see the number in just a second. Since December, it's doubled. There were 40 million in December. In December, it was such a phenomenon that Business Week put it on the cover and called the kids that we serve the MySpace generation. The MySpace generation. Because they're living both in the flesh and blood world that we are familiar with and in this virtual environment that we're unfamiliar with. And it's this phenomenon. Well, it causes us to ask some questions. What happens when you become a member? I'm going to log in for you so you can all experience this with me. I forgot my password. Every time, the first thing is you get an advertisement. You can skip the advertisement to go to my page. And every time I log on to MySpace, True is on. And their campaign for the last 6 months has been, "It's nice to be naughty." This young lady is fully clothed. It's the first model for True that I've ever seen fully clothed. Every model for True is wearing underwear or bikini or something. And saying to our teenage boys, "It's nice to be naughty." And you click on it and you go where you want to be. How many people are members of MySpace as of right now? 79,375,767 people are members of MySpace. This is something that's less than 3 years old. But it's captured the imagination of our kids. The question for us is why? Why do our kids want to spend time on this? Most of them can't even write. Right? So they create their own code. And it takes some energy sometimes to figure out what all the symbols and abbreviations and everything else really mean. Right? But they're connecting on there. Why? Because it's given them a place to find their voice. To be able to voice without judgment their struggles, their realities, their dreams, their hopes, their lust. It's given them a place to be who they are. And unfortunately, they don't all get the fact that that creates vulnerabilities. You know, I think it's still too new for them all to realize. The fact that we're sitting here talking about Blake's MySpace, for example, and his friend Petey Boy, or whatever his name was, you know, that we can actually do this all real time. This isn't, you know, this isn't some screen that I copied to a PowerPoint. This is what's going on as we speak. And you come on here, and every time our kids are being tempted by the Kaboom True Girls, who are the bomb, and you go on and you find things like this. There's a bulletin that says, "Want to kiss?" This is another one in my youth group. They forward this stuff all the time. The kissing game. If you want to kiss the person who posted this bulletin, then send them a message. You got your options 1 through 5. I'm not going to send them a message. Because I don't... So here is the little thing that they're all talking about you want to kiss. You go back to the different bulletins. I do it for her, but she can't take advantage. It's Friday. I'm home. This sucks a lot. You know, it's like the stuff that you read. You go to your profile and visit some of the friends and what they call themselves. What kind of things do they call themselves? I'm just going to skip a little bit of this for the sake of time. Radioactive bee. Sucker nut slut. Boyish sex machine. Naughty triple X Ash. These are not porn stars. Now, probably not thankfully. I don't know any of those kids. But they're all friends of kids I know. And whether that means they actually know them in the real world, or they know them online is kind of besides the point. Because if I'm 17 or I'm 14 and I have a friend called Sucker Nut Slut, what does that do to my imagination? You know, and when there's a link from that site to an easy access free porn site, what am I wrestling with? Because nowadays kids have computers in their homes, in their bedrooms, they have access on their Sidekick. You know, they've got access. Video casting, they can download the stuff and put it on their pods, and we don't even know what they're watching. Because it's that real and that accessible, and you don't have to be, you know, like cloaked in an overcoat walking in the warehouse district to access the stuff anymore. Our kids are dealing with this every day. And the question for us is, how do we respond? Do we respond with horror? I want to show you something else. This was pretty fascinating to me. There's a website called Triple X Church. Are you familiar with them? Triple X Church is actually a pretty amazing ministry. It's an online pornography ministry. And they reach out to people that are in this space struggling for porn. They provide real tools and resources to help filter out, as well as they do something, a campaign called Porn Sunday, for pastors to talk about sexual issues, you know, on a Sunday and just challenge people with purity and righteousness and all. But they did some research, and this is a little bit dated now, probably about 6 months, just to see the kinds of things people are talking about on MySpace. The phrase Bible study, remember, there are now 80 million users. At the time they did this research, maybe 30 or 40 million users. The phrase Bible study, there were 246,000 occurrences of that phrase on MySpace. Salvation, 238,000. Ministry, 711,000. Investment, 82,000. And on and on. Some other, you know, architecture, antiques. 25,000 antiquers, or people interested in antiquing on MySpace. Now compare that with sex. 9,960,000 occurrences of the word sex. The F-bomb. 13,900,000 occurrences of the F-word. Porn, 2.3 million. The S-word, 17.7 million. Nude, 5.3 million. This is what our kids are talking about, and they're wrestling with it. And we've got not just the kids wrestling with it, but worse, as far as I'm concerned, is you've got people like Rupert Murdoch exploiting it. Because every time you log on, you've got a woman in underwear enticing you to her site. And not only that, but I receive unsolicited friendship requests all the time. From people who find my profile attractive because I'm married. Huh? Right? And then, you know, it's this stuff. And I'm a 31-year-old married minister who's got an accountability group around me. But there aren't necessarily accountability groups around your average 15-year-old boy who's never seen modeled for him by a father who loves his mother the biblical way to interact with young ladies. And so what do? When this is what is being inundated with. And what about the girl who views herself like the midriff? Has anybody ever heard the word midriff before? in the context of what I'm talking about? Do you know what that means? I recommend a resource called The Merchants of Cool. PBS, about 3 or 4 years ago, did this documentary on how MTV and other youth-related media businesses market to kids. And one of the interesting findings that they had was that these media companies that are catering to our young people have two stereotypes. They actually have several stereotypes, but the two prominent ones that their programming is designed to attract, that the commercials and advertising is designed to attract, are mooks and midriffs. Mooks are basically your Neanderthal. You know, your boy who's interested in nothing but the ladies, nothing but being hardcore, can't speak English right, you know, just that hardcore, it's all about me and it's all about getting laid. Pardon my frankness. Right? And so that's the mook. And they cater to that. And the midriff is the insecure girl who's trying to starve for affection, looking to be loved by somebody. And so they play on that. They play on the insecurity. They play on the vulnerability. That's why sex sells. Because every kid I know is struggling with those things. Right? Do you know a single teenager who's not? And the marketers understand that. But unlike the Christ-like response of being there and feeling the pain and getting involved in the life and walking out the journey with them, what do the marketers do? They exploit the insecurity. They exploit the vulnerability. Why? Because it pads their pocket. This is going on. And it's such big business that they're $500 million in the hole to invest in this group. So you better believe they're going to be selling ads to True and other entities like them who are looking to be associated with this. I could go on, but I want to open this up for a little bit of conversation. Because I know I'm not the only one who's kind of come to this realization and is wrestling with this. This is the first youth conference I've ever been at where it's even a subject in a workshop. Like, what do we do with it? So I don't come here pretending to have all the answers. I'm coming here to kind of paint the picture of this is something real. 80 million people are contending with this every single day. 2.5 times the number of users that use Google are in just MySpace. We haven't even looked at the other social networks that I've mentioned. My real blog, I mean, I'm showing you both here. My real blog is on a thing called Blogger. I recently found out how to remove the bar, the Blogspot bar. Because when you press next blog, it's pretty random where you end up. And Blogger doesn't have a no nudity policy like MySpace does. For all of the raunch and filth on MySpace, that's one thing they enforce pretty well. I just found out recently, but a full third of the employees of MySpace are devoted to 24-hour policing of the site. What they police is basically just the worst of the worst. But if you get that bad, like my boy Blake, they pull the plug on your site and you got to start over again. But that doesn't happen too often. And so you've got all the other stuff that I was talking about. They don't screen out the curse words, for instance. Excuse me. But on a thing like Blogger, which is an adult, not an adult in that sense, a grown-up version of blogging, they don't. If you want to blog about your favorite porn sites, you're welcome to do that. If you want to blog about whatever, you know, whatever issue matters to me or all your adulterous relationships or your fantasies or whatever that is, it's not a problem. I didn't realize that the first time I thought, let me see who else is blogging. And you start with the next blog and all of a sudden you find this stuff. You know, and it's that accessible to people. And so our kids are contending with this every day. And what is an appropriate response? Some of the things that we've chosen to do, and I'm going to close with just a quick theological story, if I may. If you have your Bibles, Genesis chapter 11. I'm going to lay out my bias, But if you disagree with this, please feel free to contend with it. Genesis chapter 11 tells an interesting story. Most of us are familiar with this, since we're in ministry, at least I hope so. Verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As men move eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. The Lord said, "If as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other." Three ingredients were in the mix here for a situation where they could achieve the impossible. The first was they had one language. Well, how many of you know that for the first time since the Babel story, we live in an era where there's one common language? It's not English, by the way. The common language, whether you're in Saudi Arabia or in Zambia or in Southern California, is computer language. Every computer operates on the same language. And it doesn't matter what we as the end users might interpret as our language. The computers are actually speaking to one another. What else was present there? As they moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They became interconnected in this community of Shinar. They began to relate to one another. They made their homes there. They engaged with one another. They developed economies where they could be involved in each other's business and each other's lives. They became interconnected. Once again, is there a time since then where the world is as interconnected as it is right now? We're in Southern California, and you saw three MySpace accounts, one from a New Yorker, two from Brooklyn and one from Staten Island. So three New Yorkers. And we're using those accounts as live demonstrations of the power of this thing. We are interconnected like never before. And the third thing was the presence of technology. How many of you have ever thought of bricks as technological innovation? Not me either. Right? We're so used to bricks, it's like mindless. But at this point, people weren't accustomed to building things with bricks. They used rocks and other kinds of materials. And if you've ever tried to build a wall out of rocks, it's much more difficult than building a wall out of bricks. Because how many rocks are exactly the same in dimension? Right? They don't fit together. So before the invention of bricks, they could never have built a tower that reached the heavens because they didn't have the technology. But now somebody invented the technology for them to be able to achieve this goal. And because of the common language, because of the interconnectedness, and because of the technological innovation, God said, if as one people speaking the same language they've begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible. The ingredients were present for the impossible to become real. The unimaginable to become flesh and blood. And so the way he disrupts it is to change the language. I'm going to close with this thought, and if you want to come back to it, I'm happy to do it. For the sake of time, I'm going to make this real brief. But what happened after Jesus ascended into heaven? Huh? Right before he went into heaven, he said, "Go and hang out and wait for the Holy Spirit to descend on you so that you can be empowered to be my witnesses in Jerusalem and the uttermost, and Samaria and the uttermost parts of the world," right? He said, "Wait for my Spirit." What was the manifestation of his Spirit? Tongues of fire. And when the tongues of fire, when the Spirit infilled them, what did that look like in the community? They translated truth in a way that everybody understood it in their native tongue. I'm from a Pentecostal tradition, so I could say this. It didn't look like the way we practice tongues in Pentecostal churches. Right? You look at what happened in Acts 2, and Peter and his boys got out, and they spoke in tongues. One guy spoke in one tongue, and everybody heard it in their language. Whether they were from Syria, or from Cyprus, or from Athens, or Rome, or Jerusalem, it didn't make a difference. The Holy Spirit translated truth in ways that everybody could understand it. Well, what would happen, I wonder, if the Holy Spirit were able to descend into this environment where the computers are already speaking the same language, where the community is more interconnected than ever before, and where the technology exists to pull us together in ways that has never been achieved before. What might happen if the Holy Spirit, through our participation in that space, invaded my space? What might that look like? I don't know, but there are 80 million people waiting to find out. Let's open it up for conversation. Any thoughts or questions, reflections? For the benefit of the audio, I'm going to try to summarize the question. The question is, what do you do when you discover a site like this? And you don't want them exposed to the filth that exists. You don't want them receiving these emails, you know, and responding to these comments. And what do? Do you shut them down? Or is there another approach? I'm going to leave it open for people to respond to that, if I may, in the back. Well, no, or she, the... Right.
But you can put very strict privacy settings on there.
Right, and this is important. They're in part in response to concerned parents. MySpace, to their credit, is trying to clean things up a little bit. And, you know, we still have the issue of the advertising and other things. But there are privacy controls that now exist that 6 months ago didn't exist before. And so the question, I think, for us is, how can we begin a conversation with that young person? You know, rather than just tell them they can't do it, because like you said, they'll just use another screen name. And if you blocked off their email address, they'll just create another Yahoo email address or Hotmail email address or whatever they need to open the account. So if we're not actively talking to them about, you know, what it means to be so vulnerable in that community, and the fact that if you don't institute certain privacy restrictions, anybody can get up in your business and find out what's going on. And they can learn about your habits and, you know, predators and all the other stuff. That dialogue has to begin.
This is something along the same lines. Like, to think that we can protect the kid, but there were freshmen in my high school that person's there. It's there. Like, you can't avoid it.
That's going to be really hard to summarize for the tape. So I have to ask. Hopefully it did. But if we could keep the comments a little bit briefer just because of the recording restrictions. It's kind of artificial for a conversation, but it's important to do. That's a great testimony to the importance of getting educated, so that you can have an intelligent conversation, because right now, chances are they know a lot more than we do about what's accessible, so we get educated. But then to engage in the conversation, because a lot of them want to learn. I do want to draw your attention to one research source. There are tons like this, and this is by no means exhaustive, but Wired News, secular company, parents that aren't Christians are just as concerned about things like this. And so there's what they call a little cheat sheet that has some real practical ideas about what you can do. All the way in the back, standing up. Thank you for that encouragement. I have a thought, but I'll come back to mine because a lot of people want to talk. Here. Those are great suggestions to be engaged. Again, that's the result of conversation, though. Because I have an example of a young girl whose mom found her Zanga account. And was very offended by it, and so she pulled the plug. She put her on lockdown. You know, she censored her. She got in the mix. Well, she didn't realize, but within a matter of days, she had a new Zanga account without anything that her mom could search to find that it was hers. But she just began to write what she was writing, except without any identifier, so her mom couldn't see it. And so the caution to that kind of advice is, you've got to be in the conversation. The fact is, remember who we're dealing with. We're dealing with teenagers. And the point of their human development is inherently messy. Right? It's inherently messy. What this has become for us, it's like a window to the locker room. You know what I mean? Usually when kids are in school and they're in the locker room, we're not hanging with them. So we don't know what they're talking about. Or it's like an invitation to the sleepover party. You know what I mean? They're talking about stuff until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning when mom's sleeping in the bedroom and we have no clue. Well, now, not only do we get to have a clue, but the entire world gets to have a clue. It doesn't mean that they're not wrestling with this stuff. And so we need to be engaged in this conversation that's an inherently messy one, that can be very risky at times, that might even involve some personal disappointment because the kid that we thought was the leader, you know, went on a rant and used some foul language talking about what so-and-so did to such-and-such at this time. You know what I mean? It's like we could get very upset, and at the risk of being personally disappointed, we've got to be willing to go there and to walk with them in that place. Great question. Does anybody have any brainstorming suggestions for how to incorporate MySpace into the actual life of the youth group service? Over here, in response to this question in particular. Yeah, you can create a group, you can do surveys, you can ask questions, you could do all that stuff within that. You can advertise events, send out event notices and calendars and that kind of stuff, which, you know, the kids could conceivably forward to all of their friends. There are lots of things like that. Another question, which is really fascinating. When you start reading the bulletins, it's amazing some of the stuff that they're about.
This is the thing where you really have to know your kids and where they are spiritually, but we had a situation with our youth where we had some kids who we knew were Christian and, you know, had a desire to walk with the Lord. So on their MySpace accounts, they had, you know, stuff about, oh, yeah, I love God or whatever. You know, just little things here and there, but that identify them. They also have, you know, things like we're seeing on here, surveys and stuff, you know, would you do this and how far would you go and stuff like that. And it's like two different messages. And one of our youth leaders, with one kid in particular, but a couple of them challenged him. He said, you know, if you want to have it on your MySpace, that's fine. Take the stuff about God off. Take it off because you're profaning his name. And don't advertise to the world, I'm a follower of Christ or whatever, and you're also going to be saying this stuff because they're two different things. And that kid, that sent a message to this one kid in particular about, I'm not here trying to parent you and make you behave in a certain way. I'm concerned about something higher than that. And that kid, like, man, he got it. He was like, yeah. And he took, so he went, you know, about 5 minutes later, went on at home and took all the sex stuff and whatever off his MySpace. But you got to know your kids. Some kids that's not going to work with because they say, okay, I don't care about God anyway, you know. So you have to kind of know where their heart is in that. But some of the kids who really, you know, they have a desire to walk with the Lord. It may be kind of not deep or maybe deep, but at the same time, you know, they're kind of doing the two-faced thing, challenging him in that way, because I feel like if he would have said to him, you know, get that sexual stuff up, what are you thinking? You know, you're supposed to be in this youth group, whatever, that kid's like, you know, whatever, and he's going to go create another thing, or he's just not going to care, or, but that sent a different message. So that's just something to think about. I don't think that can work with everyone, but, you know.
That's an excellent suggestion. When you know the realities of your kids, you can challenge them. Remember, it's if you're embracing the mess, it's like, you know, John was the disciple that Jesus loved, and yet when John told Jesus to call fire from heaven to consume the town, Jesus rebuked him. He didn't have a problem getting in his face and saying, no, there's something wrong with that. And so there are occasions, and depending on the situation, we don't know that he ever did that to Simon the Zealot. We don't know because it doesn't tell us. But I'm sure there may have been a situation, and you've got to know the kid, be involved in their lives. This is another window into their soul. And when it flags stuff like that, you know, this youth pastor had a leader who was taking steps, who was living the life, who wanted to serve Jesus, but he was compromising and he needed to be confronted, and he made the right decision because he was at the place in his life where he could make that decision in the back. Thank you for being so transparent. You know, that's a great example. How you said you're 17 now? You know, 17 and willing to be that vulnerable in this group of adults and peers to be able to say that, partly because this is a new generation that's used to bearing their soul in very public places, and it's a great resource. The accountability is there, and there are things like that. So be engaged. If I would guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if your Young Life leader came to you and demanded that you set that up, or else he was going to stop, you know, he's going to cut you off or make you unplug your internet connection or do whatever he could possibly enforce, would you have been that open to say, hey, be my accountability partner in this? Probably not.
I was going to see if I could show everyone how to do the security stuff on MySpace real quick.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Because I don't even know how to do it, so you can use mine as an example. Go for it. I think I logged in, right?
If not, I can get on mine either way.
Yeah, I'm logged in, so you can do mine. So he's going to give a real-time demonstration of how you activate it, so I stop getting invitations to become friends of porn stars.
Also, like, one thing with, like, awesome, it's an AT&T thing. With these, someone actually gave me a tip on how to not get the true things right here.
If you're a guy and put yourself in as a girl, they won't send you the advertisements for those. I don't know if it works. I haven't done that myself. But I was talking, like, on one of the Christian groups that I'm on, I was talking with that, and they're like, yeah, if you switch your gender on there, they won't send you those particular advertisements. But just go to Edit Profile, and it should be around here, I think.
And while you do that, let me just go. Okay. That's authentic, isn't it? But that goes directly back to the point about exploitation, right? They're not afraid. They're trying to make money, and nobody's apologizing for trying to make money. But they're so into making money, they don't send the same emails and advertisements, apparently, to our young ladies.
Yeah, I knew they were in here somewhere.
So we've gone to account settings.
Come down to
privacy.
You can, yeah, there's privacy, and like there's all kinds of different stuff in here. Like this one, you can have it set for any comments that show up on your site. You can have those that they have to be approved by you ahead of time. So people can't put picture comments or anything, especially because some of those picture comments can get really raunchy sometimes, even if it's not even a picture that's meant to be. You can do different stuff on here. You just go through here, and you can check any of these things off, that things that you want. You can require email or last name. I've seen websites like that where I saw someone, their picture looked interesting, and I went to add them, and it's like, if you don't know this person's email address or last name, you can't add them to your MySpace. You can do all kinds of different stuff like this. You can set it so only people that are listed as your friend can comment on your blogs. Also, there's one when you write an individual blog. Let me just show you this real quick. If you go to blog, post new blog. When you come down here, you can set the privacy on it so that only certain people can see it. If you set it as public, anyone can look at it. If you set it as diary, you're the only person that can look at it. So this is even good for your teenagers if they really want a place to vent, but don't want necessarily just anyone being able to read it. If they're just having a really bad day and just need to get it all out there, they can do that. Set it as diary so that they're the only one that can read it, and that way they've got it out and they don't have to worry about other people coming across it. So there's different settings you can do like that. And that way you can get it set so no one... There's also ones where you can set it where someone can't even look at your profile, can't send you a message, can't do anything. All they can do is go, and all they see is your picture, and it says, this person has to add you to a friend, and they can click to try to add you as a friend, and you can approve or deny them. You don't have to accept them. So it's real easy to keep people off of your MySpace that you don't want there. Also, if you're into the music thing, like if you're doing one for a group, you can do one separate as a group, and people aren't as likely to send things like that to a music MySpace, but you can set it like it'll ask like private music, stuff like that, and you can actually do a musical group one on there,
and it's held a little differently. And that way you can also post your own songs and MP3s and stuff on there for people to download and check out and get connected to your band that way.
Thank you. What was your name?
Tim.
Tim what?
Man. Originally from Indiana. I'm interning out here in California for the summer. So.
Thank you, Tim Mann. This was supposed to be... This was supposed to be a panel discussion with somebody who could do what he just did, so I appreciate you stepping up like that. Yes, we've got time for two more questions or comments. While we get this, though, I'm going to pass out the evaluations. So if everybody could take an evaluation and fill it out. It is a great resource for the CD. It's techmission.org, and I believe you can download all of it right off the website. Safefamilies.org is a resource for filtering and other great technical solutions to some of the concerns we have. For the CD, you can control and delete and edit comments that other people make on your site, as well as comments that you make on other sites. One more question, and then we're going to call this a done deal. Right over here. Yes. Do you want to give it to the CD world? The MP3 world? Yeah, the resource that you were talking about for this forum on MySpace. All right, so that's for in-house. Thank you guys very much for coming and being a part. I'm going to hang out for a little bit if you want to talk more.